The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. Not very easy to say. It's better to say ASCVD. It's the underlying cause of 85% of all heart attack or stroke-related deaths. It's an invisible disease caused by high cholesterol, and an invisible national campaign has been launched in Ireland to raise awareness. I'm joined in studio by Dr. Paddy Barrett, preventative cardiologist at the Blackrock Clinic. Paddy, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
I like the idea of an invisible campaign.
It's quite an interesting way. It's the Invisible Nation campaign, really about bringing attention to a disease that is often invisible to many of us, but we're really trying to make it visible through this campaign.
Yeah. It's said that the first sign of having high cholesterol might be the heart attack or stroke.
Unfortunately, that's the truth for some people. We often use it as a tongue-in-cheek comment, but often the first symptom that people have of this is sudden cardiac death. So that's not something any of us want to experience. So this is why CREE, which is an Irish charity, really focused on raising awareness of cardiovascular disease, has launched this Invisible Nation campaign supported by Novartis Ireland to really raise awareness of cardiovascular disease in Ireland.
Okay, so what do you want people to do? I mean, if this Invisible Nation campaign has an effect and people say, that's a bit worrying, what do you want them to do?
Two things. One is to realise that cardiovascular disease is the biggest killer in Ireland with 36% of all deaths. And cholesterol is a major contributor to that. And cholesterol is easy to check and easy to lower.
Easy to check and easy to lower. Now, first of all, I've heard about good cholesterol and bad cholesterol. What's the difference? And when you get your cholesterol measured, do they separate out the fractions?
They do. Most cholesterol tests will have four different components, and people are familiar with this terminology of good cholesterol and bad cholesterol. The term bad cholesterol really refers to the concept of LDL, or kind of the LDL cholesterol being the lethal or the bad cholesterol. People will often refer to HDL as being high density lipoproteins, cholesterol being the higher density cholesterol being protective. But I think the research on HDL now being protective is less robust than we had previously thought. And even if you speak to the world experts in cholesterol, our understanding of HDL is getting less and less. So I think the reliance on having the protective effect of HDL has become less, and the emphasis really on bad cholesterol being higher has become more.
Now, what about the other two bits?
The other two bits are triglycerides and your total cholesterol. The ideal way to do this is you do what's called a non-HDL, which is you take your total cholesterol minus your HDL, and your doctor is very capable of obviously doing that. And that gives the best reflection of your overall bad cholesterol risk, but it's just as easy to go off your LDL or bad cholesterol
risk. Now, what has to happen, obviously, is that the blood test has got to be sent away. Why are you recommended to be fasting when that blood might be taken?
Typically, we have done all the studies on fasted samples. More recent literature would say that even kind of taking it not that long after fasting, it gives you a relatively accurate result. We know that it's possible that your triglycerides will go up shortly after eating. And so in my view, I think it is still best to fast for it, to get that information from the triglycerides. But the other measures should stay the same. But because the triglycerides go up, that means your non-HDL can be artificially elevated. So I would still recommend that people fast to get the most accurate result.
Now, what is high cholesterol? What number?
So again, we use numbers like the bad cholesterol being greater than 3 or your LDL being greater than 3, but there's nothing magical at this number. It's a bit like speed and the risk of a car crash. The faster you're going, the higher the risk of a car crash. The slower you're going, the lower the risk. So it's a continuous variable. So we want.
But do you need cholesterol?
Yeah, absolutely. Cholesterol, and there are certain conditions when you are born without the ability to make cholesterol, are typically fatal in utero, so you won't actually survive.
Okay.
But we have very, very strong evidence that you can lower cholesterol to very, very low levels for very long times, and actually it is entirely safe to do so. And people with genetic conditions that run very, very low cholesterol actually are almost immune to heart disease.
Okay. So you're generating cholesterol all the time because your body needs a certain amount of it, and the ideal level is 3 or thereabouts or less.
Well, ideal is actually much lower. When we actually use the cutoff of 3, that is a somewhat consensus agreement that above that level, the risk starts to accumulate to a significant degree. But we know, again, from these particular studies looking at genetic individuals who have very low cholesterol, cholesterol, that having very, very low cholesterol can actually reduce your risk of heart disease over a lifetime by about 80%. So it's really picking an appropriate threshold, a cut point, a bit like a speed limit. There's no ideal speed limit. Lower would be better, but we have to pick a point.
Okay, now, why is cholesterol bad for you? Let's get down to the science of this.
So in fundamental sense, cardiovascular disease, when we talk about it, is mostly plaque in your coronary arteries, or any artery for that matter. The synchronon, or the fundamental component of it, is a cholesterol particle crosses the arterial wall and gets trapped there and causes an inflammatory process. That inflammatory process results in plaque in the artery, and that plaque in the artery is an essential component to cause a heart attack. So we need to be very careful about distinguishing risk factors, cholesterol, the disease, plaque in your arteries, and also the event, a heart attack or a stroke.
Now, what happens? Does a bit of plaque come loose and block something? Is it the constant narrowing of the artery anyway, because it's just getting full of this stuff?
So I think this is a misconception that is out there. And even in medical school, I recall being taught this, and neither of those descriptions are actually correct. The idea that the artery narrows, and eventually blocks off is an appealing one. But the reality is you need even only a small amount of plaque that's very unstable and has a liquid core can rupture, and then a clot forms on top of that and suddenly blocks the arteries. And so we have very good evidence to say that the majority of heart attacks that actually happen from plaques that are less than, say, 60% narrowed. So these are the people who will have no chest pain whatsoever and then suddenly will have a heart attack. And this is why we've all heard the story of a person having a stress test, which looks for a severely narrowed artery, it being entirely normal, and then the week after having a heart attack.
Did the stress test bring it on?
No, absolutely not. This is down to just pure misfortune and bad luck. But the reason the person had the stress test was because they had risk factors.
Why would you put a stent in if it's a bit of loose plaque could cause the problem? So the stent is to presumably broaden the artery, which is narrowed. Why would you bother to put a stent in if the risk still remains of this little rogue bit of plaque doing you down?
That's a good question. And the reality is when we put in stents, they're in two broad categories. One is a person is having a heart attack, and that is an acute event. Stents undeniably save lives, no difference whatsoever. But when we actually put them in stable coronary disease, we're really only treating a very, very small area, a very small length of the artery. And we know that actually the arteries that can actually rupture and cause plaque extend across all the vasculature. So it really only focuses on one very small area.
Now, I'm trying to visualize what the artery might be like, and I'm thinking of an old water pipe which has lime scale inside, and it's getting narrower and narrower and narrower. Therefore, you know, if you get to a certain point in life, is there any point in trying to do anything about it? It's so narrow anyway. Or can you remove this plaque from the artery? Or is it like the lime scale, it's there?
So you can actually regress some of the plaque. And the key here is to think about that lime scale buildup, as you've made the analogy to. You have very kind of liquid, soft buildup, or very, very hard buildup. When you actually use certain medications or optimize your lifestyle, you make that plaque much more stable. So even the plaque that is there, it is more stable and less likely to rupture and cause a heart attack.
Yeah. Now, the lifestyle changes, what are they? I mean, there are people who drink red wine because it thins the blood, which is they see it as a prophylactic. It's a nice prophylactic too. Does it work?
No, is the simple answer. And I will just, it's as simple as that. We can go into the details on it. That's born out of the resveratrol story. And the answer really is that was based on literature that you had to drink the equivalent of 45 litres of red wine per day to achieve the benefit. So I think there are some downsides.
Okay, because I have a pal who was on warfarin, is on warfarin, and he will drink max one glass of red wine because he might thin his blood. And warfarin's already doing that.
Yeah, it's doubling down.
Yeah, okay. So therefore, the other lifestyle changes, what are they? What causes a buildup of cholesterol? Is it diet? Does smoking have a contributory? Does inactivity have a contributory factor?
So the answer is all of them do. But the foundational component is to do with a cholesterol particle crosses over the arterial wall and becomes retained in the artery. So you need that as an essential component. The things that accelerate that process are the other risk factors: smoking, lack of activity, poor nutrition. And this is, again, where this survey that was done of 1,000 adults really looked at their awareness of those risk factors. So not just the awareness of the fact that people have a lower awareness of cardiovascular disease, but those risk factors. And only 50% knew that smoking, poor nutrition or lack of activity had a risk factor, but less than 20% knew that high cholesterol was a risk factor.
Okay, now here we get into the tricky bit, nutrition. I mean, what's good nutrition? What's bad nutrition? Because, you know, someone who's really starving, you know, a big fatty burger is maybe just what they need. But someone who's well padded may not need that. So what's good nutrition? What's bad nutrition?
So I think we're looking at edge case scenarios here in terms of starvation. So, I mean, when we're talking about kind of food, we're looking at what should the regular individual be eating. And the simple rules are actually hold true in terms of real food that has limited processed food, limited sugars. And that is the kind of the key rule to hold. Where people get into really almost religious levels of ideology around these nutrition debates are between all these different diets, say a ketogenic diet, a low carbohydrate diet, a paleo diet, a vegan diet. The reality is all of these diets, when using real foods, are just exceptionally more effective than the standard American diet, basically which is high sugar, high fat, processed foods.
Okay, so eat good grub, good veg and so on, and you'll be fine.
Well, not only will you be fine, if you can get on the right side of the nine factors that explain 90% of cardiovascular risk, basically having normal cholesterol, normal blood pressure, not having diabetes, not being a smoker, having no abdominal obesity, no significant stressors, good nutrition and appropriate exercise, you can reduce your risk of premature heart disease by over 80%. So this is a game of odds we're playing, and every single one of those factors, you're always trying to get on the right side of them.
And the amount of exercise that would be ideal?
So again, it depends on your objective here, but we know that the combination of aerobic activity, so moderate to vigorous exercise, at least 150 minutes per week, in addition to resistance training exercise, so that's lifting heavy things, it's the combination of the two of those that have the greatest effect. And we know that the people who are the fittest in terms of the highest levels of their aerobic capacity compared to the lowest will be three times less likely to die over a 10-year period.
Okay, and the final question is about genetics. There are people who have high cholesterol familially, and yet no history of heart attack in the family. Explain.
So again, familial hyperlipidemia is on a spectrum, but the reality is even the people with very high cholesterol, even people with a genetic risk, which extends beyond cholesterol, if they do the right things, they can lower the risk by 50%. But people who have a genetic cholesterol disorder almost invariably need medications to lower their cholesterol.
Yeah. And I suppose the last one is about whether it's worth having a scan of some kind to check out the arteries to see whether they're problematic. And if they're looking good, carry on. Eat, drink and be merry.
Well, I would disagree with that last point. I would say the most important point is to start with the basic risk factors that we talked about, cholesterol being one of them, and then on the basis of a more sophisticated discussion to think about a scan, which is also a useful test.
Dr. Patty Barrett, a preventative cardiologist at Blackrock Clinic. I have to say, every day is a school day for me. I learnt a lot. Thank you very much for joining us. And that campaign, Invisible Nation, is about the invisible risk to you and what you should do. Get to your doc and have your cholesterol checked.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.